Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the regular meeting of the school board for Monday, December 10th, 2018. It's 7 o'clock. Mrs. Ratchford, will you take the roll, please?
Mrs. Faircreef.
Here.
Mrs. Linkemer.
Here.
Mr. Manheim.
Here.
Mr. McNally.
Here.
Mr. Noling.
Here.
Ms. Weibel.
Here.
Mrs. Yule.
Here. All being accounted for, I'd like to ask you all to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Our first item of business today is a public hearing. So I will say that this is a public hearing on the resolution to adopt the aggregate tax levy for the year 2018. And I'll call the public hearing to order. Mr. Chapman, do you have a presentation for us?
I do, yes, thank you. I'm actually very pleased to present to you the 2018 tax levy, which is for the 2019 taxes paid. This is the second consecutive year of a reduction in the debt portion of the levy, so that's something to be very proud of. And I also want to thank the board for their input and time on this over the last 3 months. It doesn't happen overnight, and I want to thank you for your time and effort on that. An overview of the tax levy, and by the way, this presentation is basically the same as what you saw back in October, if you can remember back that far, so hopefully this will help refresh your memory if not. More than 77% of the D303 revenue is from our property tax levy. We are governed by several laws and school codes. For example, the Truth in Taxation Law requires that we must adopt an estimated levy at least 20 days prior to the public hearing and approval, which we have done. We also do our levy by funds, and which is important because whether we're doing an education fund, transportation fund, operations and maintenance fund, however we're doing that, and whatever you approve tonight, we're not tied to that, but it makes it a little more challenging if we want to move funds around at a later date. We have to do transfers, and there's a whole process through that. So we try to get things right the first time. Just a reminder on some of the key dates in the tax levy process. What's grayed out, we've already done, and we've estimated the tax levy resolution coming out of the workshop in October. Really, we really started talking about this in September from a high level, but now we are through the estimated tax levy. You'll notice it says not applicable in the publishing tax notice and the hearing, which we're doing tonight. You as a board have advised, and we have historically always done the tax levy hearing and the notice, and we continue to do that this year. So tonight, during the action portion of the board meeting, we'll look for your approval on the levy, and then sometime between now and December 18th, we'll file the levies with both DuPage and Kane County. Just a refresher on some of the key definitions when we talk about our tax levy process. Operating levy is also known as the tax capped portion of the levy. We are part property tax extension law in the Collar County of Chicago. We actually are a capped district, meaning we cannot increase the levy in the operating funds more than the consumer price index ending in December, which is announced in January every year. So that's the CPIU. On the debt service side, that is our non-capped portion of the tax levy. And it's called non-cap because it's whatever you as a board and as the community has approved for the debt. That's on file with the counties, and we don't actually have to do that. It's just placed on top of whatever we put in the tax cap portion. And then lastly is the new growth, and that is new growth is considered the total EAV, which is the equalized assessed value of the community, all the parcels combined within our taxing body. What are those? What's the growth on top of that? We also see growth in terms of, you know, if you do a home addition or renovations, if there's a new business that opens up and constructs, those are all going to get put into the new growth number for what we get from the assessor's offices. Our financial outlook, I think this is a good way to just kind of step back and see where we've been a couple years ago. I know it's kind of small, but this is that large, there we go. It's not showing up for me here. Anyway, the large tall bar, the second one from the left, is where we were a year ago, and then dropped down $16 million when North High School was paid off. Those colors represent different bond issuances, by the way, which really isn't too important, but just to note that on the slide. So next year, where the star is, you'll see a slight drop. That's about a $900,000 drop for what we're paying in our debt as we go into next year. Those payments are made in January, due on January 1st. And so you see we're kind of stabilizing at that level for 3 years before we drop again. Three more years at a decreased number before we level and plateau. And that goes all the way out to 2038. You all received and the community received the focus. We talked a lot about where we are as a district in debt. You know, we are in the 92nd percentile in terms of our long-term debt and how low ours is comparatively in the Chicago collar counties. So I think that's something that the board should be proud of. D303 tax rate, this is a look at our tax rate back in 2014 through projected out to 2022. And I like to remind people, if you're trying to figure out, well, what does that rate mean in terms of dollars? If you put a comma where the period is and add a zero, that's a $300,000 home tax bill for D303. Okay, so back in 2014, that tax rate of 6.12 was $6,120 for a D303 tax bill. If that same home was $300,000 today, or actually heading into next year, I should say, that tax bill would be about $1,000 less, $5,170. And we're now shifting towards a projection for 2022 of an additional 50 cents on the dollar, so to speak, or $500 reduction as we head into 2022. So again, we're trending very favorably. We'll talk a little bit about how EVs and CPI impact that. So if you think of the relationship between your equalized assessed values and your CPI, your consumer price index and your tax rates and how they work together, the CPIU is kind of the lever that really determines what your tax rate is. Your equalized assessed values, when they are exactly, this like never happens, right? If equalized assessed values was the same, so you had a 3% increase in EAV and a 3% in CPI, the tax rate would remain the same from 1 year to the next. What's more common is you'll see EAVs higher, and that's what we're projecting this year, about a 4% EAV compared to a 2.1% CPIU, and that's going to drive the tax rate down. And then what we were experiencing after the recession in 2009, 10, 11, those years, we were seeing the opposite. We were actually seeing negative EAVs, and we were seeing low CPIUs, but that drop in the EAVs was actually pushing the tax rate up. We have talked about for several years that we have the lowest tax rate in Kane County. You know, we're the bar off to the left in the green there. And then the orange portion is your mortgage or your debt portion of your tax bill. And you can see that is a very narrow band. Again, not only are we the lowest tax rate in Kane County, we are the lowest debt of all the Kane County districts as well. When we look at our comparison group, we talked about this at the committee level, like, okay, so that's great in the Kane County. What if we look to some of the groups we compare with? We're about to head in negotiations, and these are the districts we really compare with when we look at those, as well as assessments and things of that. Where do we rank in terms of that group? And we're pretty much right in the middle of our rate compared to, some of the other districts. You'll notice, obviously the Tri-Cities are in there, but if you start looking at some of the other districts, most of those are east. And that really plays into the equalized assessed value behind each pupil. And so we talked about at the last meeting, where do we stack up? If we look at equalized assessed value per pupil, where do we stack up with those two groups? So I know this chart's a little small, but we are that district in pink there, and we are the second highest, so the second most property value behind per pupil of any of the Kane County. There's only one that has more EAV per pupil than we do. And if you look at that relative position, I'm going to kind of flip-flop back here to these other slides. If you look at that relative to where we are with our tax rate, we're the lowest, right? So we kind of moved over one position from the second highest EAV. You would expect us to be probably the second lowest in terms of our tax rate, but we're actually the lowest, okay? So then if we look at the next chart, which is our DuPage group, where do we rank? This is where I'm talking about the EAVs and how when we go into DuPage County, we go into Cook County, typically, as you get closer to Chicago, property values are higher. Okay, so where are we here? Well, we're the third lowest EAV per pupil. Okay, so relative to that position within the group, you'd expect us to be the third highest tax rate, when in fact we are the fourth. So again, we kind of slid over one more position. So My conclusion in looking at both of these groups is that really the value from the tax rate we get versus the AVs behind the per pupil is actually very good in St. Charles. So to kind of hit home on the last point on the AVs, I want to show you this chart that show the historical EAV growth, and St. Charles is here at the bottom. This is just that our peer group, the last group I was showing you. And you can see the AVs 2009 through 2014 were in negative EAVs. So that's where, you know, we had a tendency that tax rates could be going up. And, in fact, in one of those years, they actually we were able to maintain a decrease because you as a board abated a substantial amount of debt to get there. But you see the shift in 2015. Well, actually, I'm going to take you up to the top district, Barrington. You look at them in 2014. They were at a negative 0.8. They went in 2015 to a 0.4, which was lower than our 2.2. But look at 2016, where Barrington goes to a 9.5% jump in EAVs, and we went to 3.7. And if you look at all the 2016-2017 numbers, where's D303 in terms of EAVs? We're the lowest. So while we have maintained higher values relative to that group, we're not keeping pace. So it makes sense that their tax rates would be lower because they have more EAV behind those districts. Oops. Okay, and so back to kind of our levy process. Just a reminder that our levy is important not only because it impacts the current year revenue that we receive, which again is almost 80% of our revenue, but it also impacts next year. So the decision made tonight will impact that as well. Kind of illustrate that with these buckets. You know, if we look at last year's taxes, so that was the taxes paid in 2018, half of that tax levy went and kind of filled up the second portion of the 17-18 budget, and it's the first half of this year's budget. So we received those payments here in September earlier this year. And then in June, we will receive the first half of the levy that's going to get approved, that you'll look to approve tonight. And then in 2020 school year, that will be the first half of that budget revenue. So we have roughly, again, $157 million is what you as a board approved in September for our budget, and this levy is consistent with that number. So this really, you've got two previous levies up on the screen, but if you count the note at the bottom, the footnote at the bottom, you've really got 6 years of trend information for you, in which the board has been very diligent about watching the impact of our levy to the community as a whole. In particular, 2017 was under a 1% increase, below the CPI. And then in 2018, last year, with the 6.75% decrease. So a very significant decrease last year, which will continue on as we go into this year. The key implications for the levy. In the prior year, we had a 3.8% increase to EAVs. We'll talk about in a minute where we're projecting for next year. New growth last year came in at $25 million. And declining debt service last year, again, was at roughly $16 million drop. And right now we're looking at a probably $900,000, well, not probably, it is a $900,000 drop down to about $5.3 million. So when we do the levy, we talk about what do we know and what do we project. What we know is that we have a consumer price index at 2.1%. And again, that was announced in January of 2018. We're about 35 days away from finding out what next year's CPI is going to be. It's trending a little bit higher than that for next year. Our projections for this levy for EAV is a growth of about 4%. So fairly similar to last year. There's a chance that might be a little bit higher, but we try to stay a little conservative just in case. And then our new construction, we're estimating roughly $30 million. That's what we think is going to happen. In your approval in your document, we are putting in a $45 million increase because we only get one shot at that. And what I mean by that is if we are too low on that new construction number, then we can't recapture that. It's kind of lost and gone forever. So we always make sure to overshoot that just a little bit in the levy. The county assessor always brings us back down to the actual number. So if we look at this from a district perspective, we are aligned with our five-year projections. We have approximately a 2.4% increase. You know, I know Mrs. Hewell, you asked kind of why is it 2.47% in the actual document. That 0.7% is related to rounding. Essentially, we're rounding up a little bit. Again, the assessor will drop that back down to the actual number the actual number is 2.4%. The consumer price index drives 2.1% of that increase. New construction represents 1%, so if you add those two together, you get to 3.1%, and then that debt drop of $900,000 basically shaves off about 0.7% to get us to the 2.4% total. So what does that mean for a District 303 taxpayer? This chart, we've used this before. 2017 tax, these are tax rates, both for the operating and soon I'll show you the debt in just a second. You can see a shift from the 2017 to 2018 with the known CPI of 2.1% means our rate change will yield an $85 reduction. And there's an assumption built into that. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. On the B&I, which is the debt portion, bond and interest is what that stands for, we're seeing a reduction from a 0.213 to a 0.17. That's going to equate to roughly $42 and a decrease on the tax bill. So the assumption in the asterisk here is basically saying we're assuming, as we did in the prior slides, that we're going to get a 4% EAV growth and $30 million in new property. So that's number one. The other assumption that's embedded in here is that the particular home that you're in, the valuation of that home doesn't change from one year to the next. So if you're assessed at $300,000 last year, that you're going to continue to be assessed at $300,000 the next year. We don't know if that actually happens. We don't know if in individual homes if that will happen or not. In some places it will, in some houses it won't. The 4% essentially means that we're saying that if that home went to $312,000, that's a 4% increase, that you would just wipe out that $85 number. And you'd be left with the $42. So what I would caution or what I would ask people to think about when they're looking at, well, what do I expect my tax bill to be? I'd probably just count that out. I would say, you know, I'm not gonna plan on getting that $85. If I get it, great. That's a nice thing. But I would probably plan for around a $50 decrease in your tax bill for a $300,000 homeowner. Our next steps tonight, hopefully in about a few minutes, you'll approve the tax levy. And we will go ahead and file the levies with the counties within the next week. We'll file those with both DuPage and Kane County. Any questions?
First, I will ask the public and then the board. Okay. Thank you very much. That was very instructive, and I think you really put a lot of time into explaining it, once again, very well for the board. So thank you very much. Next, I would like to ask for any public comments or questions at this time. You don't need, Right, regarding this topic, you don't have to have signed up if you have a question or a comment. I don't see anyone. Okay, next, board members, do you have any questions or comments for Mr. Chapman, Dr. Chapman?
I guess I do.
Please.
Just because I've already spent my $100 or $120. I just want to make sure I lock it in. That's a relative number, right? If I go to 312.
Yes.
And everyone else stays at 300, that's when I get in trouble. If everybody goes to 312, right, then we're all good.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
All right. So 120 is mine.
Thank you. I would actually like to go back to maybe the fourth slide where you talked about the operating rate going into the future.
Oh.
And I've been so focused over the last couple of years, the board's been anticipating the drop that we had this year,
yep.
But I hadn't really thought about that one. And so if you, could you tell me why it goes, I can't exactly see it, but it looks like 5.17 to 4.69 going forward in those years. Some of the reasons for that?
So there's two things. One thing at play is our assumption about EAVs. Again, that helps to drop your tax rate, right? So when EAVs are rising above the consumer price index, and the footnote 4% is assumed in EAVs, 2% is in CPI, so that alone is going to drive our tax rate down because whenever we get those EAVs above CPI. The other portion is you can see barely that orange, narrow orange line actually gets more narrow in years 21 and 22 mm-hmm. because we pay off some additional debt.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those factors that are driving that drop.
Because I was, you know, the violet color is the bigger
yes.
bumps, so I was interested in why that was. Okay, so it's all just more of a, it's an EAV driven change.
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, thank you. So board members, does anyone else have any questions or comments at this time, and then we're going to vote in a little bit. Okay. In that case, I will now close this hearing. Thank you very much, Dr. Chapman. Next on the agenda are citizen comments. Mrs. Linkemer, would you read our statement?
The school code provides for a public comment period at each board meeting subject to reasonable constraints. The practice of this board is to limit public comment to 3 minutes per speaker to a total of 30 minutes per meeting. Speakers addressing the board are expected to maintain a reasonable level of civility. Also, personnel matters are sensitive and confidential. Comments regarding individuals should be respectful. Insults and defamatory remarks have no place in this setting. The board will terminate public comment if speakers cannot adhere to these guidelines. Please identify yourself at the beginning of your remarks.
Thank you. The first speaker tonight is Jennifer Kolb, speaking on alternative school options. Welcome, Mrs. Kolb.
Bring this down. Hi, my name is Jennifer Kolb. I would like to speak on the inadequacies of the alternative school and perhaps the exploration of other options. When students are removed from their home school, community members are completely oblivious to what happens to the child. Many people think that the student has the option to attend private schools or homeschool, but that is not the case. The only option in this district is the alternative school, or quote unquote, the safe school. As a district, we need to decide if the safe school is provided for students as an opportunity to continue their education and become successful community members, or if it is designed to further punish students and act as a juvenile detention center. I believe that it is the responsibility of the school district to provide an education for their students, all their students, and that the current safe school is not meeting the needs of its current or future students. As times are changing, the type of student that is attending the safe school has changed as well. What may once have been an acceptable opportunity for students to continue their education is no longer sufficient for the current or the future students. The current safe school option that is offered to students that are dismissed from school or almost expelled, I guess you'd say, does not meet their academic, nor does it meet their social, emotional needs. The curriculum that's at the safe school is not aligned with the high school's curriculum, and it is creating large gaps in their education. This not only creates problems when the students return to their home school, but it also creates several issues with standardized testing, such as SATs or ACTs. The safe school students are allowed to work on only 3 classes at a time, and often they only do one, which causes them to fall behind on some of their core curriculum and greatly impacts their standardized test scores. There needs to be a better option for students who are college bound. When students are dismissed from their home school, they are not allowed to participate in any clubs, activities, or athletics, all things that colleges are looking for. It seems as though there is no attempt to improve or rehabilitate students that are dismissed, and in fact, it appears as though the district is holding the students down. For example, at the high school, students are allowed to miss 5 days of excused absences to go on college visits. At the safe school, students are not allowed to miss any school, and they must use unexcused absences if they want to visit a college. And if they have 3 unexcused absences, then it results in an infraction. So there needs to be better options for students who want to improve themselves and who are college bound. Not only is the district failing to provide appropriate academic needs, but they are also failing to provide social emotional needs as well. There's no program in place to check the social emotional well-being of students that are dismissed other than if the student goes and seeks the help of the social worker. The entire process of removing students from their home school is very emotional for students, and there should be a system in place to check in so that students' emotional well-being is more closely monitored. Also, the setting of the safe school is not conducive for students' social emotional needs. Sitting in front of a computer that is lined against a wall for 6 hours a day with no talking or socialization of any kind is certainly not the best way to rehabilitate or motivate an individual. Why would I want to hold my student down when we could be educating and providing ways to improve and rehabilitate them?
I'm willing to volunteer my time. Okay, I was just going to say the time is up, so please, if you could just recognize that. Thank you.
Wrapping up.
Okay, wrap it up.
I just wanted to say that if there was anyone that wanted to, that I would like to donate my time if we if you would like to explore other options to provide students another opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Tim Cole, speaking on expulsion. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Tim Kolb. I'd like to take a few minutes to address concerns for the district's expulsion process of a student. As you know, once a student decides, once a school decides they want to expel a student, there is a process. The process for expelling a student is to have a hearing that takes place before a hearing officer, the school administrators who are recommending the student be expelled, and the accused student along with their parent or guardian. There have been multiple cases that the hearing reports summarizing the hearing given to the school board for the vote were grossly insufficient, with much crucial testimony either omitted or skewed. I would like the board to implement a process where both parties, meaning the student up for expulsion and school administrators recommending expulsion, have an opportunity to approve the report that will be going to the school board for vote. Both parties should agree that the information is complete, accurate, and sufficient to represent their side of the case. If the information cannot be agreed upon, that information can be noted and explained in the board meeting with board members present. I would also like to afford the student up for expulsion the opportunity to speak with the school board at the special board meeting to give their version of the accounts from their incident and for the board to hear it directly from the student. This process is probably one of the largest and single most important experiences a person will face throughout a lifetime and should not be rushed. I would like to see sufficient time allowed to the board to thoroughly review the hearing documents in advance of the special board meeting where they will vote. In several cases, we've learned that there was less than 24 hours time for the board to review these documents, which is a large packet, before they would cast their vote. We understand that state law requires students not to be removed from school for more than 10 days, which makes this an extremely expedited process, so we should consider putting the students temporarily in school suspension so we can keep them in school to allow sufficient time to be thorough and accurate, yet stay within the law. Another very important point of this process is the method in which the investigation into an incident is conducted by the school administrators. Any investigation made by the school needs to be done with checks and balances. If the information from a school interview conducted by a school official is to be used as evidence in an expulsion, the student should be aware that they have the right to have a parent present and they are obligated to answer, that they are not obligated to answer anything they wish not to. I would like to make it mandatory that the students sign a waiver stating they understand their rights before an administrator can start questioning them. I would also like to see that interviews either video or at least audio recorded for accuracy. The full account of an incident should never be only that of a dean and his handwritten notes who is recommending the student for expulsion. All students should be aware that their testimony can and will be used in the school court of law for expulsion purposes. Lastly, if a school official is to recommend a student for expulsion, they should have interviewed that student somewhere throughout the process. We are seeing that principals and assistant principals are recommending students for expulsion, yet they never took the time to question the students or research any findings for themselves throughout the process. Their recommendation for expulsion is derived solely from a dean's findings, and that's going directly to our board to vote on. How can they have an individual opinion about a student if they've never even met? Please consider making these important changes to our procedures to give each student their deserved rights. I can make myself available anytime to discuss these matters in greater detail as well. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. Our last speaker tonight is Bobby Rail, speaking on committee, mics, and audio. Welcome, Mrs. Rail.
Yes, good evening. My name is Bobby Rail. I'd like to make a few comments on the action item C, audio recording board committee meetings. First of all, I go to many committees meetings, and I must tell you, sitting in the audience, it's very difficult to hear. The only one I can really hear is John Baird because he knows how to project from the diaphragm. He said it was all right if I said that. And so you do need mics. And second of all, committee meetings are really a time when you think out loud, and you shouldn't be afraid to do it. I've sat in your seat in Connecticut and here, and it is a time when you think out loud. And being recorded so people can listen to this process of thinking out loud and coming to conclusion and whether you're going to forward something to the board. That's very important. It shows a board in action. And so please don't be afraid to be recorded. Deal with the reality. That's what gets us moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes citizen comments for this evening. Next item is the superintendent's report. Dr. Pearson?
Well, good evening. Thank you for this time and opportunity. I just tonight would like to highlight three things for you as a board that I would like to make sure that you're aware of. First of all, we did make a change to the January 14th board meeting. We flipped Belgram and North High School. We were originally scheduled to be at Belgram in January and North in March. But because we have a large number of students that we would like to recognize at the January board meeting, we would like to flip those. So in January on the 14th, we will be at North High School. We have made those adjustments on the calendar, but we just wanted to make sure that you are aware that we had changed that meeting. I think the venue will accommodate the number of people that we would like to include that evening. Then also, tomorrow night is, of course, our annual special night for special kids. This is a program that has been present in the district for many years now, where we provide some opportunities for families to come together in a safe and supportive environment to celebrate the holidays. It's at Davis Primary from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and as board members, you are all invited to attend. Hopefully, you'll at least be able to stop by. It's a really unique program that brings both our students and staff, as well as community volunteers together to support the kids in our school district. So it's something that we're very proud of, and we certainly would like to include you in that if you can attend. I would also just like to mention this evening that we are very excited. We have continued to expand under Mrs. Smith's leadership and Dr. Roosh, our parent and community engagement opportunities, and we are excited that in the spring we will be offering a mindful parenting book study. Actually, I see that a couple of you may have picked up a book already. Mindful parenting is a program that we're providing to parents. We're going to have some guided discussions and book studies. So far, we've had 215 parents that have registered for this study, which is really a significant number for our programming in the district, and we're very excited that there's that much interest from our parents. The pickup was today for people to pick up their books, and the book discussions will take place both in morning and evening sessions, as well as online for people who are not able to attend either the morning or evening session on February the 7th, February the 21st, and March the 7th. So if you need more information about that, please let us know. We will continue to allow members of the public who are interested in participating, if they could let us know and sign up soon so that we can make sure that we, A, have enough space, but then also have a book for them. So anyway, this is something that I think is really appropriate at this particular time as we continue to try to support parents in partnering with us to educate their children. So thank you so much. That concludes the superintendent's report.
Thank you, Dr. Pearson. That is a pretty cool idea. Next, we have the committee reports, and I will start with learning and teaching because that's our business.
Okay. We met on November 19th. We had a couple of recognitions, welcome celebrations. Jordan Stiegel, who's a student in District 303 Transition Program, gave a brief summary of her work experience. Transition Program serves young adults in areas of employment readiness, education and training, recreation and leisure, and independent living self-care skills. Congratulations to Jordan for her growth through this program. She was a wonderful young lady, and she spoke very well. Mrs. Shute introduced the staff members who worked at the transition program, and those people are Darcel O'Brien, Dominic Kazi, I hope I'm saying that right, Devin Edwards, Kristen Gehrig, Ashley Wasserman, and Denise Luker. Transition program is involved in a collaborative effort with the St. Charles Public Library. A coffee shop, The Daily Bean, will open in January of 2019 at the library and will initially be open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Monday through Friday. Coffee shop will be staffed by students from District 303 Transition Program, and more information will be communicated as the opening date approaches. For information, we had a review of our assessment data and its impact on instruction. Dave Chizar gave information on our performance series data for 2018, grades 3 through 7 in reading and math, Park District benchmarks for 2018, grades 3 through 8 ELA and also math. Grades 3 through 8 overall, District 303 is outperforming national and benchmark averages. SAT suite of assessments 2017-18. PSAT will be for all grades 8 through 11 in the fall, SAT for grade 11 in the spring. PSAT NMSQT for grade 11 in spring to qualify for the National Merit Scholarship Competition. The AP Potential Index was discussed. PSAT grades 8, 9, and 10 will be spring 2019. School year 2018-19 data was reviewed for PSAT, 8-9 for 8th grade, for 9th grade, and PSAT NMSQT for 10th and 11th grade, and SAT for 11th grade. Advanced placement, the AP scholar summary for 2018-19 and AP five-year summary was reviewed. Grades 8 through 12 overall, D303 is outperforming national and benchmark averages. And what this means for instruction, emphasis on data conversions at the building and district level, teachers continuing to use data to impact their instruction, continuous focus on improvement. A few examples were provided from both elementary and secondary schools of how data is being used to directly assist students. There is no action required on that. Our next meeting is going to be next Monday, the 17th, at 5:30. And right now we are looking at some additional data updates, perhaps next month or next week, correct? So, and I think that's all we have right now in our future agenda items. So,
good. Thank you very much,
Mr. McNally. If I can ask you a question, what is on the agenda for the next meeting?
I just was reminded code of conduct will be on there as well. So again, the additional data update and code of conduct. My apologies, I must have missed that.
So December, our next week's meeting is data and code of conduct?
That's correct.
Oh, it is. Okay. So will we have an opportunity next Monday to discuss some of the, to hear about the processes of discipline and that sort of thing for, in relation to some of the comments we heard tonight, or... So it's only code of conduct. It doesn't talk about anything else. Okay.
When I thought, weren't the athletic directors going to provide? Is that next week?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's three parts of discipline: code of conduct, school discipline, and then like SRO. Those are only doing the code of conduct.
Next week, it's just the code of conduct update.
Okay.
If you'd like to talk about discipline, I think the appropriate time to do that would be when we bring the discipline policy, which comes pretty quickly right after the start of the year for approval for next year. That would be a good opportunity to discuss.
Okay,
that.
I might bring it back up at new business at the end too, as well. Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was it.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to ask Mr. Mannheim to speak on Business Services Committee.
Yeah, thank you. We met actually just last Monday for kind of our November-December meeting. As always, we led off with our financial reports for both Mid-Valley and D303, and those are in your packet for information. Our next items pertain to the budget. I know we're getting ready to talk tax levy later, but... getting ready to start for the budget. So on for consent tonight is the budget calendar for 2019-20, as well as designating Dr. Chapman to prepare the budget for 2019-20, and that is on for consent as well. The next item we discussed was the Norris Cultural Arts Center agreement. It's time for our renewal, and there was some language things that was brought up, and Dr. Chapman is going to take that to the attorneys and bring that back to our January 14th board meeting for action. Our next item, we discussed the food services bid RFP process that is coming up here. And we saw a calendar and timeline for how that's going to take place for both K-8 as well as high school. So the more information will be coming through the committee as we get more information. Item G, reviewed quotes for the award of Anderson Elementary Interior Painting, and that is on for consent tonight. Our next two items were kind of our big talking points. The first one was overview of D303's building and property utilization. We kind of like to see what all of our buildings that we own and properties that we own. And the committee asked for a utilization versus capacity report, and that's going to be brought to us on the January 31st Business Service Committee meeting. And then that kind of was a segue into our big topic, which was our continuing discussion of options for Haynes and what we'd like to see done with that that building and property. And we looked at five topics, including selling, leasing, demolishing the whole thing, renovating part of it, A and B. And so we had a good healthy discussion on that, and we're going to continue that in January as well. And that'll kind of continue until the board decides what they'd like to do. And then our last item was a construction update. Mr. Lamp came in and kind of filled us in on the progress over at Thompson and the exciting things that are taking place and all the things that are looking forward to taking place and getting us ready for August. And then, as I mentioned, January 31st is our next meeting. It'll be kind of a big one. We'll have the audit presentation, which we had to push back, PMA's five-year forecast. We'll look at the fiscal year school fees for 1920. We'll continue discussion about Haynes building options, as well as hearing that building utilization versus capacity report, and then a construction update, including financials on where we stand to date with the financial portion of Thompson. And I adjourned somewhere around 10 or 11. Yeah. I don't remember.
Your meetings just get longer and longer. But does anyone have? Well, I shouldn't say that. So thank you for your report. Thank you. Next, I see here on the agenda, policy committee met also at this time.
We did. On November 19th, we were on the back end of the learning and teaching committee meeting. We started a little bit before 7. There were four policies that we went through. Mr. Moore talking through them with us, changing out basically language or small events, things that we needed to clean up. Anyone who wishes to go further into those policies, they are included in the entire packet for tonight. There were four that we worked on that evening, so if you did not have a chance to look at those, please do so. We will be back meeting again on February the 19th. Providing that Mr. Moore has some things for us to see, and I imagine that he does. We will not, though, be backing this up to any more L&T meetings, so we'll have our own event to do our policy meeting on the 19th of February, and that will be it.
Thank you. Thank you. Community relations also met this month.
We did. We had a busy month. So we met on November the 27th. Community relations met. We did some recognitions for St. Charles North, and we'll go over those in January. Thank you, Dr. Pearson, as well as both high school swim teams. We had a student liaison report discussing the Feed My Starving Children packing event, which was a success with over 160,000 meals packed. The students also discussed that they're going to do another student-led survey, and they're going to coordinate with our with Mrs. Carol Smith here and work out the results to communicate back to the students. We went over the four action item, which is on your agenda tonight, which is the public comment period, that the motion that will be introduced tonight that will be expanded to include a 15-minute period at the end of the meeting as well as a 30-minute at the beginning. So that's on your agenda. The second point we discussed that was old business was community engagement. So we went into a very robust, I liked your word, discussion of the what's and whys of community engagement, and I think we came to a consensus of agreeing upon the whys and the need of community engagement. We still have to figure out the hows. So that's going to be our continuing topic. So we'll keep going on that for our January meeting. It should be focused. What do we want to know? How do we want to do it? Is there a formal engagement process? It should be ongoing. We need to identify all district stakeholders. What are the tools in place for engaging those groups? Mrs. Smith is going to do a little audit of how we're currently doing it. We're going to be discussing that next time. The next item we had was the committee recommends the audio recording, as we had our comment today from Mrs. Rail, of the school board committee meetings and releasing the audio on the district website. So that's a motion on your agenda for tonight. And there's a policy that's on the consent agenda that has press proposed changes. Hopefully you looked at that if you weren't able to attend the meeting. And then the last thing that was on the agenda was the City of St. Charles joint meeting request. We went through, Mrs. Hewell brought us some information from the city that the agenda items for presentation would be land cash, TIF, safety in schools, and the role of city in the presentations of how we work together collaboratively. And so we agreed that that sounded like a good idea, so we're going to work together to set up that meeting at some point here in the near future. And then the future agenda item for our next meeting, which is January 23rd, is more community engagement, as I mentioned, and the King County Opioid Task Force update. The one thing I just wanted to highlight about that, we had a November meeting, is that the one thing we'll be talking about is a fellow named Tony Regano, who's heading a collaborative crisis service unit in Elgin. They have this awesome program that addresses crime instead of arrest crime. So it's just something I want us to think about and talk about how it rehabilitates, and they want to partner with schools. So we'll be talking about that. So that's community relations. Next. You want me to do the next one?
Certainly. Is that housing?
Nope. So district PTO.
Oh.
Remember, we talked about this today. So I have a couple updates today. So DPTO, I was not able to attend, but I did get an update from Mrs. Smith, and I'll be quite brief on it. But Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Galt, Dr. Galt, sorry. Yeah. And is it Mrs. Roush or Dr. Roush? Dr. Roush, okay. Presented an overview of the upcoming parent university opportunities. I won't go into it again because Dr. Pearson presented the mindful parenting. My Vanna. But it is an awesome program coming up, so we just want to encourage everyone to make sure you're talking in the community about it and telling people to make sure they're picking up their books and encouraging them to get prepared for their three-part series. So that was a very robust discussion at DPTO. They had a discussion as well about kind of parent university in general that was, I think, really good and productive. I actually went to the Rosecrans Parent University, which was excellent, and there was some good data that was shared about vaping and all sorts of pictures of things that kids carry around, so I think that's really useful. So I'm sure that's up on the website. Yes? No? That might be good information to share on the website so people have a visual connection on what they could be looking for in their high schooler's life. Just an idea. But the group discussed also the ongoing low volunteer participation in the elementary schools, and they shared ideas about how to reach more volunteers. And then Dr. Pearson came in and gave a report card regarding curriculum and some of the upcoming celebrations. Anything else you want to add about DPTO, since you were really the only one present at this table?
No, it is, my portion was clear.
Okay. All right.
Great. Thank you very much. I did remember that you were going to speak about it.
Okay.
And there isn't anything for Housing Commission.
No, but okay. I do have ISB.
Yes, let me just...
Okay, do you want...
Does anyone have anything else? No? Okay. And DPTO and intergovernmental will be in the next week, so they'll be coming up. So, yes.
Sorry.
Would you give us that
update? It's the
update?
Carolyn Show, I know. Mrs. Hewell and I... discussed an IESB update because we haven't actually met since IESB happened. And so we all got the press release from the IESB delegate assembly, but just wanted to review from our November meeting and our votes that The vote actually passed in regards to the Student Safety and Protection Resolution, which was about arming staff in the school buildings, and it did not pass. It was not adopted. So, but it was 203 to 179, so it was a very, very close vote. And I have to tell you, it was very intense deliberation. So it went on for an hour and change, I would say, and then finally someone called to end the discussion. But it could have gone on for several hours. It was a very intense and enthusiastic debate. And I think, you know, I think there's certainly pros and cons to it, and I don't think we're going to hear the last of it. So it's something that this board will have to revisit and discuss the pros and cons to it. And so we can talk about it then. But I think for those of us that have law enforcement near us, it seems like a non-issue. For people that don't have law enforcement near them, it's an issue. So I'm not sure how you resolve that in a very large state like Illinois. So that tends to be the conflict. In regards to the other votes that we deliberated on, the one that we asked, we approved the energy equipment, the voter registration, the school safety decision making, mental health. We actually voted against the charter school funding methodology, and we were only one of probably 12 or 15 schools out of 400. So that obviously passed, but we did vote no on that. But so just to let you know, that did not go in our favor. The other highlights of the IESB, I'd like to just share with you a couple quick things from general session. I saw David Schuler, who was the superintendent of the year, and Dr. Pearson, I think, was in that one as well. And he talked about what was interesting. He's in a District 214. And he talked about using data not to rank and spank, but to improve and enhance. And I thought that was an interesting quote. I'd share it with you. So I think it's good for us to think about. So making sure we're using data for the right reasons and purposeful. The second speaker that I wanted to highlight really quick was Ruby Bridges, who was a civil rights, symbol of civil rights. She helped integrate the New Orleans Public School at age 6, and then she was really a powerful speaker. Were you there for that one too? Yeah, that was incredible. You've seen her speak before though, right? No, that was amazing. So the two things I just wanted to highlight that she said was that something that really stuck with me was that right now education is a very intense time with everything going on, and that there's not room in education for egos. So we have a lot of things going on that are serious for safety and the future of all these kids. And so it just, when she said that, it just was very intense when she said that about, you know, we don't have time for egos and we have to pull together, and that we have that hate isn't color anymore. It's about good versus evil. And she just wants to be on the side of good, regardless of who it is, regardless of what they look like and where they're from and what their background is. So I just think it was a really powerful message that we're here to be on the side of good and to do good and to take care of the students. And so I don't know if you want to add anything, Dr. Pearson, to that, but
it was just an excellent presentation.
Yeah, excellent presentation, really nice, very powerful message. So I think, you know, I encourage, it's the one workshop or seminar that our board can go to. I just continue to encourage the board, if they can swing it, to go, because it is really an awesome opportunity. And you've been for many years, I know, as well as Mrs. Linkemer, to go and learn about not only what other districts are doing in the different workshops that I went to, but to hear some of these very persuasive and emotional speakers. It kind of rejuvenates your passion for what we're doing. So I think it's really important. And I went to a bunch of breakouts of Weathering the Scorn and Board Decisions, Safety School for Social Media, and Community Engagement, Setting District Goals. I don't know. I was a little bit on fire. So it was pretty awesome. I could have probably done a whole week of it, honestly.
I don't know. I'm usually pretty tired after about 36 hours.
Sorry, that was that was pretty long-winded, yeah. But I was pretty pumped about that. So.
Well, thank you very much for being our representative.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. It was my honor, truly. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, I think that is the end of committee reports. We'll move on to four action items. The first item is May I have a resolution to adopt the 2018 aggregate tax levy? Mr. Manheim?
Second.
And Ms. Fairgrieve? Okay, so that is clearly the presentation that we just heard. We've talked about it in different levels for the last couple months. Does anyone have any other questions, concerns, comments they want to make about our levy? No? I think for myself, I think I would just like to congratulate us. I think that was really a very strong presentation there, Dr. Chapman. It was more than, even more than just the buckets, you know. I think we really had a lot of background. I liked seeing the projection going forward, and I think it's just a good thing for the school district to see how efficiently we're running the school district. And I know the board, everyone really appreciates that. So thank you very much. Other than that, if there's nothing else to be said, Mrs. Ratchford, will you take the roll, please?
Mrs. Linkemer?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreen?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes, the motion carries. The next item on the agenda is, may I have a, let me get the exact wording as it might be in here. I'm getting dizzy. Just the same thing. Okay. May I have a motion on public comment at board meetings?
So moved.
Second.
Weibel and Mr. McNally? Yes. So we talked about this at the committee. And it's here before us.
I was just going to chime in and say, I think some of the things we discussed at the committee about public comment and before and after is that one of the pros of the after is that if someone wasn't able to come to the beginning of the meeting, they could come in afterwards and speak, or if there was something that was said during the meeting, they'd be able to speak about it after. Again, following the same rules that we set up ahead of time with the three-minute rule and what have you, and they can sign up during the course of the meeting just to set those parameters. And so I think that kind of synopsizes what we discussed at committee, if anyone else wants to chime in.
For myself, I did have a question, which in talking to Dr. Pearson and setting up the agenda for today's meeting, a question that hadn't been answered is I was expecting that board members were thinking that a member of the community would speak at either time, not at both times. In other words, that someone gets 3 minutes to speak and it's at one or the other times, not at both. But
I would be comfortable if someone happened to speak at both, because if the purpose at the end is to comment on something that might have happened during the meeting, I don't know how they would be able to do that. So to me, it require more management.
But. Just a reminder, the policy 2230 that we were presented with does have the statement in it, speakers should choose between commenting at either the beginning or the end of the meeting. So it's there in writing. So if that is something that we did not agree on, then we need to either edit this or do something about that before mm-hmm. we would go ahead and vote.
So I'm just pointing out one of the details or one of the hows of why. Do you want to?
I was just going to say, you know, I think one of the things you decided was to just have a trial period until April 4th and to revisit this at the community relations meeting. So I would suggest that you go ahead and try it and see, you know, what kind of frequency you're getting from the public, and it would give you an opportunity at that time to revise your policy if you chose to do so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good point.
For my part, whenever anybody wishes to speak on something, I'm willing, happy to allow them to do so. So I'm happy to allow the time afterwards as well. So. Mm-hmm.
As am I. I'm just questioning. It's written down in the policy that we are now putting into place that it's either mm-hmm. one or the other. So we need to make a decision one way or another now if we're either going to take it out or it's going to be in the policy.
Actually, a question. Is this in policy or is this stating what under
policy.
What topic of policy it is? This isn't a policy. Is it? This is just like we do on our other ones. We stay where it's.
I think it's being added. That's how I interpreted it. To policy 2.230.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she put it in there for reference. That's what I was trying to say. If you look very often, there's the, if you want to go and look further. So it is not a policy. It's just a prayer.
I don't know that the issue ever came up in community relations around choosing one versus the other, but it's in here.
Mm-hmm. Right. As I said, we had to, actually, as I walked into the room, I was already thinking we were going to be doing it today. So I said, you know, we need to have two sign-ups, and they reminded me that we hadn't voted yet. So
So to clarify, is this the wording that would be under policy 2230?
It's not a policy.
Okay.
It's just the reference. So we're just making
this. So if it's just a reference to Dr. Pearson's point, it's just a trial. So we don't have to.
Right. What I would recommend is that you go ahead through your trial period, and then if you want to change the language in the policy. Right now it just says a speaker can speak for only 3 minutes unless you decide to let them speak for longer. So the same could apply to speaking at the beginning and the end of the meeting. You could prefer that they choose, but if you choose to allow them to speak twice, then that's your choice. And that's kind of been what you've done in the past is, you know, I can't think of a time where you've really told someone they couldn't speak. You have... you know, pretty much in your practice, extended public comment if needed to hear from everyone that wished to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think probably for my part again, we're looking really, are we calling this an extension of the comment period at the beginning? In other words, the comment period is really a 45-minute comment period and 30 minutes at the beginning and 15 at the end, in which case it's an extension, then we'd only allow 3 minutes. But I think the purpose we were considering two distinct purposes for comment, one to speak to people before they voted and one to comment on, mostly to comment on how they voted. And so,
But I will correct, we decided that we weren't going to do it such that the first comment was for actions to be considered and the end, you know, you could speak whenever. So that's why I thought, well, if someone wanted to speak for 6 minutes on the same topic, regardless, because we're not putting that format into it.
Right. And I would doubt anybody would want to continue their 3 minutes are up and then want to continue that diatribe afterwards. I would hope not. But I think, you know, our primary purpose, I guess, is really to allow comment on this is what you just did and this is what I think about it versus this is what you're about to do and this is what I hope you do. So ultimately, although we're allowing any, I think that we might not want
it's not
to
even
limit
on the website.
So, might not want to limit whether or not someone can sign up for both. I don't. Should that become problematic, I think that's why we're having a trial period. So
I agree with you, Ed, but with that said, are you proposing that we do the trial period and just handle a situation ad hoc as it comes up or change the verbiage and what we're actually voting on?
Well, I think we would, because it's a trial period, I think that's kind of what you do is the situation as it comes up. And then we say in what is it going to be, 4 months, 4 or 5 months that we have this, our next discussion. We say these are the issues that came up, and then we actually write vote on an official policy.
Okay.
And that's kind of, if I'm not mistaken, that was sort of your recommendation.
Right. So if you look at the policy right now that's referenced, there is information there about the time limit and, you know, so if in fact you choose to change your process officially, then that would be the time then to rewrite the language for your policy.
Thank you.
I guess a way to look at it, too, would be a person has 3 minutes to speak, and you can divide it up as you choose, but it's still 3 minutes. For myself, you know, even as I sit here, I understand the reason for it and everything, but I would say as a person that's chaired committees and the board president, I've sat here for years and as a member and had people talking about, let's move the meeting along, let's be crisp, let's be good with our use of time. So I'm kind of surprised that board members would like to spend an extra 15 minutes potentially at each board meeting for something that could have been done earlier or could be done at another meeting. Additionally, at first all I thought about was this meeting, and actually it's for all of our meetings, so if you think about it, it's a lot of extra time potentially, and I just want people to realize that even though I've heard from many, many people over the years to keep it moving. And we've all heard it, whether it's your committee or, you know, this meeting. So just trying to be the voice of boards and what you've said in the past and what you're saying now.
I think there are specific limitations that are put in place here. You're going to keep this moving because we have a 3-minute time limit, and we have a 30-minute and 15-minute time limit, so we're going to keep it moving. I think some of the – we get bogged down sometimes in discussions that kind of go in different directions, and we've tried to do some things to streamline the way the board communicates, but I think I just don't ever want to limit the way the public can tell us what they're thinking, so –
Does anyone have anything else to add?
I agree. That's why we put it on here.
So to sum this up or to reiterate what we're voting on, it's as written here. At this point, we're going to do it with speakers choosing either one to speak at either time in the meeting, one or the other, to sign up, and that in 4 months-ish, on April 4th, we will look at it again and vote again, is what I think I heard.
I just want to clarify that if someone does want to speak twice, I think it's up to the board, like it is, to go over or allow them to speak twice. I don't think it's going to be an automatic no.
I mean, I would agree with that, especially if we're in a trial or pilot period right now. I think we'd have to look at those one-off as they come up.
So we thoughts. Will be...
Because that did
changing.
Not come up in our discussion.
It did not, exactly.
So that was truly an edit error, to be honest with mm-hmm. you.
It just didn't come up at all. So
it shouldn't be on here, truthfully.
Really? Well, it is because the policy as it is right now is a person speaks for 3 minutes.
Yeah, but not
so
the
unless
either
we take
or.
That away and then add this.
Oh, I see. That's why. Okay. Well, I think we should just, as Dr. Pearson said, make sure we, you know, have discretion and kindness and when people are trying to speak.
I'd suggest that we strike that line. I suggest that we strike that last sentence and approve it as is, and then you know, it's a trial period and we come back. We never talked about, you know, beginning or the end. If the notion is that we want to have public comment, you know, let's give that a try. That's my thought. And we never talked about it. I don't know how it showed up here.
Right. No, I said at the beginning why it was there, because I actually thought that I wasn't thinking, and I thought we would have the sheets out today. I just really didn't think about that we were, before I talked about the agenda, I thought we were maybe already starting in a trial period. So I said we need two sheets out there at different times. So we didn't talk about it at all.
I just don't understand how it got, somebody wrote it down.
No, I am telling you that I said that it seemed like we have a person speaking for 3 minutes, which is our current policy and or process or whatever, and that a person speaks for 3 minutes and they speak for 3 minutes. Now this could be 6 minutes, and we didn't really say that we were going to add, you know, another 3 minutes. We just said we were going to add another time period. So I took it in a very, you know, step-by-step manner and said that we need to have some kind of a format.
So are you suggesting we need to edit this before we
One of two things. I think that collectively we agree that we're going to kind of be pretty relaxed and kind of give this a trial period and see what happens. If somebody mm-hmm. wants to come up and say, you know, I told you at the beginning of the meeting you shouldn't do this and now you did it and I'm mad. We accept that. That's mm-hmm. part of the – we allow that to happen and then see if that's helpful for the board, if we feel like it gives people an opportunity to have their voices heard. And if we don't, then we amend it or whatever at the mm-hmm. end of the time.
I agree with what Mr. Noling just said about striking that line.
Yeah, that is fine. I mean, this whole thing was written up after the conversations at that meeting. So if something doesn't – resemble what the conversation was, then we need to be really clear. Nobody had spotted it and said, oh, I don't think that's right, so that's okay. Okay?
So do we want it? We can make a motion. We can strike the motion that's currently on the table because we do have a motion on the table.
You can amend it.
No, we can amend it. So we can amend it to to not include that last line.
Does everything else fit what you think you were discussing at the community relations meeting?
I believe it does.
I do as well.
I agree. Okay.
So may I? Let's see.
I move to amend the motion to strike speakers could choose between commenting at either the beginning or the end of the meeting.
And I would second that.
In a second. All in favor? Or do we need to take a voice vote, do you think?
And a voice vote.
Voice vote? It's an action item. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Individual vote.
Individual.
Vote, vote, yeah.
All in favor of the amendment, we need to make sure there. Was that your original? Who was the original motion?
I was the original motion.
Carolyn.
I was the original motion.
Okay, so we have a motion and we have an amendment on the table, so then you need to make sure everyone's in favor of the amendment.
Right, exactly. I was just thinking we could do just a voice vote, so you know.
You can do all in favor for the amendment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we'll just go around the table. Mrs. Rich, will you take the roll, please?
Sure.
This is roll for the amendment, just to clarify. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. And the amendment to strike the last line of that paragraph.
And then we will vote on the amended motion, is that correct?
Yes.
Oh. You're ready.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Please take them. Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkemer?
Yes.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes, the motion carries. Now, is there further discussion about the amended motion? No further discussion. Mrs. Ratcher, will you take the roll, please?
Mm-hmm. Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkemer?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
No.
Mrs. Yule?
No. Motion carries. Thank you. The next action item is C. Just wait for you to catch up. Which is, may I have a motion on the audio recording of board committee meetings?
So moved.
Second. Sorry.
Mr. McNally, Ms. Weibel. Okay. Is there any more discussion? Is there a discussion about that topic?
Just to reiterate from our committee that for recorded, there was multiple items brought up that it's difficult to hear in the back. It is very beneficial for our own board members to hear a recorded meeting for committees if you're not able to attend, as well as the community, of course. We want all of our stakeholders to be involved in all of our discussions as we are holding public meetings, stakeholders being any member of the community that would hear. So recording would help in that instance of all of our meetings. And I think those are some of the highlights. If anyone wants to jump in with any other highlights, please do so. Thank you.
There was comment about very few hits on the current recordings. I think that as we become more technologically advanced, I guess, I think we'll probably see more hits than on these kinds of things. Again, that's where the discussion takes place, and I think people want to know not just what the board voted, but why they voted as they did. And sometimes you might explain why you voted as you did, and it might resonate with someone who opposed you initially and heard what you had to say and might say, now I understand why he did that. So, and also, conversely, might say, I thought that what he had to say was wrong, and now I know what I want to say when I want to contact that individual board member.
Is there anyone else? For myself, that's kind of interesting. I've been a person that talked about you vote with your voice, and I do continue to feel that way. And I would give my reasons at the meeting here. At a committee meeting, I mean, so many things are pretty standard that it's not a big discussion point. But oftentimes, I don't know how I'm going to vote as I leave that meeting. I'm thinking about it, and I'm waiting for the packet to come out, to be honest with you. For myself, when we are in committee meetings, anything I ever say in the future should be considered that it could be questioning or challenging or a hypothetical situation or the best, which is the devil's advocate for something. I've heard all of those things at the table, and I don't want that to get lost in a recording. But I That said, I am going to vote for this measure, but I just think that it's very important that we speak very clearly, and you're very clear with your comments, because things that are said in a more comfortable setting sometimes could not be what you mean to say. So I think that's important. And the reason I'm actually going to vote for it is because of something that actually Mr. McNally said at that meeting. And what he said, Ms. Weibel just reiterated, was that it's for the good of other board members. And when you miss a committee meeting, and I miss very, very few committee meetings, but if you miss a committee meeting, you don't get the gist of things. And I think that is important for board members, and that's why I would vote yes for it.
I will point out that I was a bad boy and had missed the previous business services meeting discussion of Haynes due to another commitment, and I was able to pick up in discussion what had been discussed, but it certainly would have been nice if I would have been able to click on it and kind of almost in real time just listen. So that was one of the thoughts that I had, is that we're, you know, we allow people to attend our regular board meetings electronically, and we should allow board members to listen at least to the committee meetings electronically. So thank you.
If I could just also add, I would just, add that in this age of accountability, it's good for us to just be documented in things that we say. And if you say something off color, just people understand that you're being recorded on everything you say, and it's part of the public image, right? So you are what you are. It's kind of the old Popeye phrase, I am who I am, and that's who I am kind of thing. And that's, you get what you get. So the best thing you could do is just continue to try to be thoughtful, but don't be preemptive about what you're saying, because you still want to be organic in the committee meetings and let things naturally flow. So don't be stifled by the microphone. It's just a
I think
piece of metal.
It's bound to happen, and that was my concern all along, is that board members, we won't have the robust discussion that we've had in the past if you're concerned that your question will be taken out of context. As I say, your devil's advocate question or something like that. But I think
I can add one more thing just on that note.
May.
I think, we are acting in a public setting here. There's nothing that would prevent someone from the public just sitting there with their own recorder and recording mm-hmm. the meetings. Frankly, I'd rather have the meeting recorded officially where everything is heard, so that if somebody's sitting there with their little, tape recorder, they may, there could be things that are lost in translation or lost, just because the audio is not good. Here, everything's recorded, and more context would be provided that way.
Mm-hmm. And there's one last piece to this, which is the cost of it, and I am concerned about at $200 a meeting that, it's not negligible. I mean, a district this size, it's small, but I think I would not want to be adding on to that in any way, meaning having extra people around or whatever. I think we can do it in a very financially efficient way. That would be my hope, that we don't spend $10,000 a year recording meetings.
We did discuss some
we
of the efficiencies.
About that.
Yeah,
some of the efficiencies. And
I'm just relating that openly now.
It would be, if we had to have somebody there for every meeting, but if this boardroom is not used for something the next morning, first thing, those people would just be able to come in and attend to breakdown of the audio equipment the next morning, rather than having to stick around for another 4 hours. So I don't know that it would be a consistent cost per meeting.
I think as technology and space evolves in our district, we may have a permanent space, and then we won't have to set up and take down as time goes on. So it could be a temporary solution as well. Just a thought.
Right. Anyone else?
One final comment, yeah. And I mentioned this at the meeting. I just kind of feel like it's one of those opportunities that we have to, if the public really wants to dial in and listen to that. I think sometimes it's frustrating, sitting here sometimes as a board member, to feel like there's a perception that there's some sort of plan, that it's a new world order that we're trying to run in some sort of scheme here. And I love the idea of kind of having it out there, everything, the bills that we pay and the discussions that we have, and, let people kind of see how we arrive. Because I think the other piece of this is sometimes we come to the meetings and we've kind of hashed out issues. And if somebody really wanted to understand how we got there, I think it would be well documented that way. And, you know, all of the business that we're doing is really kind of out there and recorded, and somebody can grab a hold of it. So I think that, you know, the even though there is expense, I think that, you know, that could really pay off in spades in terms of confidence and trust, you know, broadly in the community, where, you know, where there might be pockets where, you know, again, they think that, you know, we've got an agenda that we're trying to run, that, you know, you can listen to it. Listen to every discussion we have. That's why I'm going to support this.
Okay. Mrs. Retchford, will you take the roll, please?
Mr. Noling.
Yes.
Ms. Weibel.
Yes.
Mrs. Faircreek.
Yes.
Mrs. Linkemer.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
No.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mrs. Yule.
Yes. Motion carries. The next item on the agenda is the resolution authorizing the destruction of certain verbatim records of closed board meetings. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Ms. Linkemer and Mr. Noling. So just so you know, I had already pulled the next two. They're often in consent, but with newer board members that hadn't been here for those meetings, I know they often like to pull them, so I just put them into F4 action. And this is just a standard job that we do every 6 months.
I will chime in, because I do every 6 months, and say that because these dates in this particular one do not apply to me, I'm speaking to several new other board members, I typically abstain, and that just works for me. So that is my reasoning.
Anyone else? Mrs. Fetchwood, will you take the roll, please?
Ms. Weibel.
Abstain.
Mrs. Faircreek.
Abstain.
Mrs. Linkemer.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mr. Noling.
Abstain.
Mrs. Yule.
Yes, the motion carries. May I have a motion on the six-month review of closed session minutes pursuant to the Open Meetings Act?
So moved.
Mrs. Linkemer, and a second?
Second.
Mrs. Weibel. Ms. Weibel, I'm sorry. Similar but different. None of us have been here for all of these meetings, but I pulled them both for consistency. Is there any discussion about it? None heard? Would you take the roll, please?
Mrs. Faircreek.
Yes.
Mrs. Linkemer?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes, the motion carries. Now we have the consent agenda. Does anyone wish anything to be removed from the consent agenda? None heard? May I have a motion to consider the consent agenda?
So moved.
Mr. McNally and Mrs. Linkemer, would you take the roll call vote, please?
Mrs. Linkemer.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mr. Noling.
Yes.
Ms. Weibel.
Yes.
Mrs. Faircreek.
Yes.
Mrs. Yule.
Yes, the motion carries. The last items the next item anyway, are the four information items, which include several Freedom of Information requests. The Community Unit School District 303 and Mid-Valley financial reports for October 2018. Do any board members have any comments or questions on any of that? No? And last is new business. Is there any new business?
I would like to bring up new business based on some of our comments in the beginning. There has been a discussion in the community about some of the concerns about the process we have. So I do want us to take a look at, as I mentioned, I referenced that one program in Elgin about, I can't think of the phrase, sorry, address crime instead of arrest crime. I really want us to look at some of our processes in regards to our rehabilitation and our discipline process and how we're doing things. So I understand we have a policy, but I'd like to propose it to the board that we figure out one of the committee meetings to kind of take a look at the remainder of the process. I know we're looking at code of conduct, but I want to kind of take a look at all the process to make sure that we're keeping in mind the social-emotional needs and concerns of all parties involved through that whole process. So I'm just not sure that's getting taken care of.
Dr. Pearson, I think you made a comment earlier in the meeting that this is something that will naturally be occurring. after the first of the year. Is that not correct?
So every year we do bring the entire discipline policy to the board for review. I think that that would be a good time to look at all of our procedures and policies related to student discipline, and that would be an opportunity for you to look at that. I think the board would need to educate itself a little bit about some of the legal ramifications for some of the recommendations that are being made. Many of the procedures that are in place in our discipline policy are related to either state or federal legislation. And so I know that you think that there might be great flexibility there, but there's really not a lot of flexibility in some of those procedures. So I think that would be the best time to talk about it and look at all of those pieces.
Okay, and that might be, some of that might be in closed session, or is that all open session?
We can talk about the policies and procedures in open session.
Okay, and so when do we discuss that? What time of year?
It's usually February, early March at the latest, I think. I'm not certain.
Oh, it's April this year?
The committee meets earlier.
Yeah,
right?
We can bring it earlier than that.
To a committee meeting?
Yeah. Okay. We normally have to have it done so the high schools can run their student handbooks. So we'll try to get that to you maybe early March.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to make the comment that it struck me when I first ran for the board and got on the board at, you know, how important I felt those conversations were and those discussions among the board members and, you know, going through that process and how challenging I think it is. And, you know, candidly, how proud I've been of the board to find what flexibility does exist and, you know, try to really effectively balance, you know, the needs of a specific student who, you know, may be in kind of a crisis situation against the needs of the student body. And I think at least the boards that I've been associated with, I think have been diligent and worked hard to really effectively balance and try to find good outcomes for both of those. So while I look forward to the conversation, I do think that it deserves to be said that we've worked pretty hard to make sure that we balance those needs effectively.
I
concur with Mr. Nerling. I don't think I've ever seen anybody take any of those discussions lightly. I think it's something that weighs heavily on everybody. I know we always have good, usually quite long discussions on those issues. One thing I would like to ask is, you know, you said that the board members should educate ourselves, and I'm hoping that you'll provide some of those things to show us, and so we can understand greater some of the strictures that are in place. I think some of us do, but some are not as immersed in this as others. So
I just think we have an opportunity here to partner with some of our parent community members and some of our athletic clubs and things like that we might be able to pull together as a community to see if we can't come together with an action committee or something to kind of help some of the situations.
I think so. You're expanding it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean,
Discipline committee.
Yeah.
So that's and that's parents. And
do they have parents on the discipline committee?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And there is, okay.
So a question I have, and this is actually a bigger question for board members. So we have something that came up kind of out of the blue for a lot of us, and so we are going to get educated as part of the normal, as an addition to the normal discipline review. But is there a board desire to go further at this time, as Mrs. Weibel has made a request of in new business?
I think we are going further. It's just that going this is further not that something we can do tonight. Between Dr. Pearson and Mr. Moore, this will be presented to us, and I'm assuming at policy committee. Mm-hmm. So we have policy committee meetings coming up, and this will be a topic that will be, mm-hmm. I'm sure, this will not be a quick conversation. Mm-hmm. This will be one of those meetings that we maybe have a sandwich from Panera waiting for us halfway through. But yes, gentlemen, am I correct in my assumption? That's how this would run. Mm-hmm. So we will do it. I think it's mm-hmm. important to do it also, but I want to see it done within the context of being directed intelligently into this by the people that run our school district and have the knowledge to do that.
And that's exactly kind of my point. We're going to start with information.
Yeah.
Well,
so we don't know where we're going to go from there at this time.
The only additional comment, I don't know if it fits in this or not, but I had some questions related to the curriculum at Safe Schools, some of their guidelines around attendance and things like that.
and I don't know if that's a separate topic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that is something we can provide for you. So if you'd like mm-hmm. a copy of the Safe Schools Agreement, and then we can also get you information mm-hmm. Related to the programming.
Mm-hmm. That would be helpful, I think, too, in relation to tonight, to the comments.
And so when I had gotten on the board a long time ago, there was Safe Schools, and I thought, well, this is a unique kind of thing. And they said, I don't know if you were on the board back before that, before, I don't know, 2000, there wasn't even a Safe Schools. So this is a big improvement from the nothing. It used to be a student is expelled, and that's it. So I think that needs to be part of the framework. And this is what the county does, or I'm sorry, the ROE does. So there's a limit to what we, to our role. Nonetheless, so we have agreed that there'll be a policy committee meeting that we'll have in addition to the discipline committee's work, or no?
They will come to the policy.
Okay. And then we'll have the presentations and learn more about it. That's as far as we're going right now,
yep.
Right? Okay. Just making sure. Okay. Is there any other new business? No. Okay. Actually, there are all three of these. Are these all
no.
three? No. Yep. And that one. Yep. Okay. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session by roll call vote for the purposes of collective negotiating matters between the public body and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, or for litigation. And the second motion, part of the motion, is for litigation when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of the particular public body has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal. When the public body finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the minutes of the closed meeting. May I have that motion?
So
moved. Ms. Linkmer?
Second.
Ms. Fairgrieve? Would you take the vote, please?
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgrieve?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkmer?
Yes.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes. The motion carries. So, in less than 5 minutes, if we could meet in the other conference room for the closed session. Thank you all for coming, and on behalf of the board, I really wish to, we all wish to wish you a wonderful holiday season going forward, or the holiday that you might have just celebrated, and hope everyone comes back in January refreshed, ready for another great school year. Thank you very much.
It is now 10:28, and the board is now back in open session. Mrs. Retro, you take the roll, please. Mr. Noling.
Were we?
Here.
Ms. Weibel?
Physically here.
Mrs. Fairgrieve?
Here.
Mrs. Linkmer?
Here.
Mr. Manheim?
Here.
Mr. McNally?
Here.
Mrs. Hume?
Here.
May I have a motion on the settlement agreement?
So
thank you, Ms. Fairgrieve.
Second.
And Mrs. Linkmer. Any discussion? None heard? Ms. Retro, will you take the roll, please? Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgrieve?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkmer?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Yes.
Mrs. Hewell? Yes, the motion carries. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Mr. McNally and Mr. Noling is the second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None heard? We are adjourned. Thank you very much.